You're listening to the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Pitchers and catchers have reported. The World Baseball Classic is in the championship round. Opening day is right around the corner. It's only one thing left to do, and that is talk fantasy baseball with one of the best minds in baseball, Joe Sheehan, Newsletter Live, right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I'm your host, Corey Parson, the Fantasy Executive, and of course, it is my honor to be sitting here today talking baseball, and we'll do a little bit of other stuff too, with one of the best baseball minds in the business. That is my guy, Joe Sheehan. Joe, welcome to Studio 34 right here in New York City, home of the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. This is your thing, Joe Sheehan, Newsletter Live, right here on the radio. The audio edition of the great newsletter.
Good to be here, Corey. Good to finally be doing a show with you. Good to be here in this great studio you guys have built out, and I look forward to talking some ball.
No doubt about that, Joe. So before we get into it and start talking baseball, like I said, we'll talk a little baseball today. Jeff Erickson has joined the program. He's a Northwestern alum, of course. They were out in Salt Lake City for the NCAA tournament this weekend. So we'll talk some baseball with Jeff, his beloved Cincinnati Reds, and his Northwestern team that went down out there in a wild game out there in the NCAA tournament. Plus, we'll look at some WBC, the World Baseball Classic, and get into a couple of more fantasy baseball-related items. But you know what, Joe? Today, getting ready for the program, I was looking at your Wikipedia. Did you do that yourself, or did the Russians do it?
The Russians did it. The Russians did it. In fact, that James Comey got talked today about it.
Really?
It's
going to
be a problem.
No. All right, so USC, huh? I didn't know you went out to Southern California for college. How was that?
It was all right. You know, somebody asked me yesterday on Twitter how I ended up at SC. It was basically because Notre Dame said no.
Really?
You know, I'm an Irish kid from New York. Yeah. Notre Dame is like our school. We wanted to go there. They had other ideas. So it came down to SC or Fordham. You're an 18-year-old kid. Fordham's a commuter school.
Right,
you know,
there.
Where I'm from up in Inwood.
Yeah.
So I could ride the 12 bus every day. I could go out to California. When you're 18, it's an easy call.
I would have been in California, too. I've rode that 12 bus. It's not. I'm quite sure the co-eds were a little bit better out in Southern California. So, what high school you went to?
Regis.
Regis, that's right. I know I was a couple guys that went to Regis. I went to St. Raymond's High School for boys in the Bronx. So
my cousin went there. Yeah. Played center field for them.
Oh, there you go, right there. How about that? Look at that. Look, a little connection right here. Joe, how long have you see, a lot of people in our industry, they look at the newsletter as a fantasy baseball service, but this is really just a Major League Baseball service, period, correct?
Yeah, if anything, I get some grief because I don't do as much fantasy-specific stuff. I write about baseball. It's what I've been doing for 20 years, going back to when we started Prospectus, started the book, started the website. It went to Prospectus Premium in 2003. I've been writing for Sports Illustrated for 10 years now, and it's really very baseball-focused. Now, you can get fantasy stuff out of it. Mm-hmm. I tend to write a lot of score sheet stuff because, Corey, I play a ton of score sheet.
Yeah, that's
the
thing, huh?
Yeah, I've never been that good at roto.
Yeah.
Category games where you got to focus on saves and RBIs. Something like score sheet or Stratomatic's always been better for me. So if I'm going to write, it tends to be. But anything player-focused, you can pull from that. You can do fantasy stuff. And then I try to drop some fantasy stuff in when I can. But it is very much just, you know, a baseball focus. And in particular, I talk a lot about industry issues.
Mm-hmm.
I talk a lot about business and finance and labor. As much as I do the player. So it's a mix of stuff. I think if you like fantasy baseball, you'll like the newsletter, but it's not necessarily like, say, getting a subscription or listening to this network or what have you. It's really a baseball product.
Now I'm glad you mentioned that because we'll talk on and mention some of the fantasy stuff a little bit later on in the program and get into it. You know, you say the Joe Sheehan newsletter, smart, fun baseball writing. Also, not only in season, which would be a fantasy service, also takes you through the off season. And speaking of the off season, you know, I was thinking, you know, Major League Baseball, they say that they have a problem attracting younger fans. We're going to see games broadcast on Facebook this year. Obviously, you know, the pace of play has been a big deal in Major League Baseball because it makes it a lesser TV product. But the attendance numbers are rising. The TV viewership may be down, but the attendance numbers are rising. Do you think that maybe baseball is just a bad television game and it's better to go out to the ballpark and enjoy it that way if you're a true fan? Or do you really think baseball is truly losing popularity and something needs to be done to make it a better television product?
I think it's a different product in person. You know, if you're watching on TV, you're focused on the pitcher batter battle because that's the angle you get, and you also get replays, and you're focused on the game. At the park, it's a social event. You go with your friends, you have a couple, you sit there, you talk. If anything, it's a little harder to do that now. One of the things I found, and yeah, I'm an old man, get off my lawn. But you can't have conversations at the ballpark anymore because they're always blasting this stuff. It's a little harder.
They got
but
the music and going and everything.
It's a social thing if you're at the ballpark. I mean, I used to be a guy who'd go to games when I was a kid. I'd keep score. Yeah. But now if I'm at the ballpark and I'm not working, I'm talking to my friends. We're having a good time at the game. It's a different experience. Like, football to me is better on TV than in person. Hockey, though, is far better in person than on TV. Mm-hmm. Baseball kind of splits the difference.
Yeah, so when you go to... how many a regular night throughout the course of the baseball season for you? Are you flipping through? You got the package going. You're watching everything. You focus on one team. What are you doing? June 26th on a Tuesday night.
Right. And it's funny you mentioned Tuesday because Tuesdays and Fridays are the nights where it's almost always a nighttime schedule. Mm-hmm. You pretty much start at 7 o'clock and run through the West Coast games at, you know, the end 1:30. And that's what I'm doing. You know, I've got the package, and let's say there's a great pitching matchup. Yeah. I'm focused on that game. Otherwise, you know, I got a couple screens open. I got the iPad. I got the TV. And I'm watching a couple different games. Or I'm jumping to, you know, here's a situation. Here's a hitter I want to see. Here's a matchup I want to see. Oh, look. It's 2-1 in the seventh, second and third, nobody out. Let's go see what happens here. The nature of my job, where I'm not covering one team, I'm covering the whole league, means I want that level of flexibility. If anything, you know, on nights that I go to a game, I feel like it takes me a day to catch up on the 14 that I didn't see.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I still like going to the ballpark, but if I go to the ballpark, it's probably more I want to enjoy it, see a game. Went to Pittsburgh last year, went to Milwaukee last year. I didn't get to Comiskey last year. U.S. Cellular, Progressive, whatever they're calling it.
I did change these names.
Yeah, I know.
Corporate.
I don't remember. Whatever the ballpark in Chicago, I actually missed that last year. But if I'm going to a ballpark, I'm probably going because I want to enjoy myself. Watching at home, I'm watching because I'm working.
Okay, you do it for work purposes. Have you been? How many stadiums you been to?
I counted it up. Current teams that I've seen in their home parks, I want to say it's like 19.
That's pretty good.
But some of them are like I never went to a game at Memorial Stadium, but I've been to Camden Yards.
Oh, I love Camden Yards. My favorite, joint in the whole majors is Camden Yards.
You got to get to PNC if you like it.
Really,
Camden Yards, fantastic. But I want to say it was 19, and of the current stadium, so maybe it's like 17 or 18 current stadiums. Mm-hmm. But in my life, I've been to 25, 30. Like I saw the Rockies when they were playing in Mile High.
Okay.
Before they built Coors Field.
Wow.
Or I've been to Candlestick, and I've been to AT&T in San Francisco. But yeah, it's something like 25, 30.
What about Oakland? You ever been? I heard it smells like urine.
No, I'm gonna tell you something. I went to Oakland Coliseum mm-hmm. before they built Mount Davis. In fact, I still remember the last time I was there. It was 92. It was the second to last day of the season, and it was gorgeous. It was a beautiful place to watch a ball game.
Yeah.
And then they built Mount Davis and they ruined it. So before the Raiders came back, that was actually a nice little ballpark to go to. Now it's a hellhole. It's old.
Yeah, no,
it's
now it's this, yeah.
They got to build a new one. But I mean, this was 20. This would have been 92.
See, the new one
25
being
years
San Francisco.
Ago.
It's like
San Jose, I think.
Yeah, okay,
San Jose. But you got to get. I mean, you got to go where the people are. You got to go where the money is.
Yeah.
There's no question that they're the second team in that market. They got to get. It's a bad ballpark. The one thing they do have is the public transportation. The BART goes right to mm-hmm. the park. That helps them. They probably won't have that in the new park. But you know, it's going to be a park that's surrounded by parking lots. That's the model.
Joe, would you consider when it comes to your fandom? You're obviously working in the industry, got your own thing going, play a little fantasy, and you're going real deep when you start talking Stratomatic and score sheet and stuff like that. Would you consider yourself a purist?
I know, so loaded.
Yeah, because it's like a bad word to baseball guys.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
It's calling me the F word or something.
Yeah.
But I think I'm probably more a purist than not. I don't know that I'm one extreme or the other, but I'm probably 65% purist.
More purity than anything.
Yeah.
But you see, I think because when you think of the purist, you think of, oh, don't change the games, not made for TV, deep stats, going to the ballpark with your pen and pad and keeping score and stuff like that, and baseball, the thinking man's game, the national pastime. Don't change a thing. You know what I mean? I don't even want to see the designated hitter. I am a purist. I'm an old school baseball guy. And you know. I'll be honest with you. I make fun of those guys. I mean, I'm an entertainer, do whatever the case may be. But I actually grew up, like, my first love being baseball. I wanted to be the third baseman for the New York Yankees. I don't think I've ever shared that with anybody before, so I'm quite sure it's going to be a lot of jokes about that in the upcoming weeks. But, you know, it is what it is. So, but, no, I do think the game needs to make some kind of changes. But I think I'm satisfied in saying that you know, it's just not the TV product that, you know, and everybody wants it to be. I like the ballpark experience. I go to baseball games by myself, sit in the bleachers, get out there with the real rowdy fans. So that's the way I look at the situation. So I'm a fan of it. So let me ask you about the newsletter. What is would you say is the actual goal of the newsletter? And how often do you, throughout the course of the regular season, do you update?
Well, the goal is to generate money for food and shelter.
Okay, no doubt. I have children. I have children also. So we thank you.
No, I like to write. I mean, that's the one thing about it. It's, you know, everybody's got their thing, and I'm able to write something I can do. I love the game. I mean, it doesn't come always. I'm very critical of the industry, and I can be critical. And people
Why is that?
I think that, and this dates to the Bud Selig era, and we're seeing some of this with Rob Manfred, where I just don't like to be lied to.
Yeah.
We talk about this pace of play argument. I don't think the pace of play argument is necessarily an honest one. I think that we're not talking enough about the real reasons why games are longer, which are, you know, the pitcher-batter battle takes longer now.
Mm-hmm.
Pitchers are trying to not throw strikes. They're trying to throw balls and get the umpire to get fooled by the catcher. Pitch framing. We call it pitch framing.
Yeah.
The game is slower because the game is naturally slower. Things like that. And I feel like when baseball says, well, this is a massive problem, well, you have record revenues and attendance. So I'm having trouble identifying the problem here. You add a bunch of commercials in the postseason, so clearly you don't think pace of play is that big a problem.
Yeah.
You know, so things like that are... Let's have an honest discussion. So I'm critical of the game, but I love baseball. I love watching baseball. I love watching Andrelton Simmons go to his right. I love watching Mike Trout in the batter's box. I love watching Clayton Kershaw do anything. I love the game. So I'm fortunate. I get to write about this thing that I love. And so the goal of the newsletter is just to share that.
I mean,
if I can create baseball fans, that's great. But mostly it's just trying to get good content about baseball and affect the discussion. I mean, I've got X number of subscribers. Well, there's no reason to be a secret. About 2,000 subscribers.
That's nice.
There's a bunch of people in the industry that write. Within the baseball industry, within the baseball media that read it. I'm proud of that. It goes back to, you know, people knowing from me from when I wrote for Prospectus or, you know, writing for Sports Illustrated. I get to do stuff like this.
Yeah.
I get to go on, we're recording this on a Monday afternoon. I'm going to spend all day tomorrow doing radio shows around the country. I love talking baseball. So I do the newsletter because it's a vehicle for communicating about baseball.
Now, when you get to your level in the industry and obviously growing up in the city, Northeast, baseball is a big thing here. Do you have a favorite team? Or have you lost fandom?
I've definitely lost some fandom.
Wow. I hate to hear that.
Well, the thing is, I don't know personally what did it, Corey.
Yeah.
I mean, I grew up a Yankee fan. I grew up literally walking distance from the stadium.
Yeah, me too.
We're from basically the same area. So I lived the Yankees. I probably saw 90% of Don Mattingly's at-bats from 83 to when I went to college in 89. A couple things happened. The Yankees won.
Yeah.
We won 4 championships in 5 years, starting in 96. Now,
spoiled.
In the 80s, right, is it ever going to feel the way it did in October of 96 when Charlie Hayes catches the pop-up? And I'm crying in L.A. Because, I mean, I was in L.A. at the time.
I was in South Carolina.
Yeah, I mean, is it ever going to feel like that again? No, then we win 3 more, and you get a little spoiled. And I don't mean to be this, like, arrogant Yankee fan. I don't mean it like that. But it's just, you're never going to feel the way you did at 18 about your favorite sports team that hasn't won since you were 7 years old.
Yeah.
You know, I was 20, whatever, when the Yankees finally won. You're just never going to have that passion again. Some of it is the job. I'm absolutely sure of that. I just don't know what percentage of my loss of Yankee fandom is... You got spoiled. You got jaded. Honestly, they tore down my home.
The old house was tearing down. The old house was. It was. You go to the new place. It's nice. It's cool. But it's like a 5-star hotel. It's like I want the old house across the street that rocked in October.
Right.
Smell like urine in the hallway. You might get stabbed outside. You know what I'm saying? That was Yankee Stadium to me. This new thing is like whatever.
There's nothing wrong with it. It's just not the same thing. So the loss of fandom is I don't walk into the stadium anymore and have those memories of 30 years ago in a games with my family. You know, and it was emotional for me. I was there the night they closed it down in 2008, and I didn't want to leave.
Yeah,
and
no, that's
it was
that's
letting
it.
Go
yeah.
a piece of that. So nothing against 2009. The other thing, of course, I had a moment in 2009, and this was kind of one of those professional / fandom moments. I was on the field in 2009 when they won. I was working for SI, and I got to literally be down there. I still remember kind of like wandering around. Celebrations going on.
Yeah. You know,
Nick Swisher's just out of his mind happy.
Oh,
his
man,
dad's
bro.
Right there.
Yeah, bro. I love it, bro.
But it was one of those things where it's like, I'm on the field. The Yankees have just won the World Series and I'm standing on the field.
It's crazy.
I just don't think it's ever going to be that moment for me again. Like, to whatever extent I still was a fan, it was like, this is where it's peaked.
Yeah, no doubt. Now, when and you're writing, and you know, you're obviously social media profile and stuff like that. When you write negative about a team, do you get that fan base emailing you, trashing you, talking about, oh, you're a Yankee homer, you're this, you're that, you don't know what the hell you're talking about? Because I get a kick out of stuff like that.
I do too. The fun thing is, I mean, and I don't get this as much as guys like Keith Law do, but you know, there are people who literally think they hate every single team.
Yeah.
For me, it's funny because I will get criticized. Oh, you're such a Red Sox homer.
Yeah.
This is when Theo Epstein was there, Ben Cherington, when they had a really good front office. Yeah. I would write a lot of good things about them. Well, you're such a Red Sox homer. And I'm like, dude, I grew up 5 minutes from the stadium. I hated the Red Sox. You know, it's just, it's, you write what you write, and people are going to take it the way they take it. All you can do in my position is make sure that when I write X, I've got facts A, B, C, and D backing up X. That's my whole principle. If you can write something and back it up, whether it's about a player, a team, whether it's positive or negative, if you're backing it up with facts and data, you've done your job.
All right, we are off and rocking and rolling right here. Joe Sheehan, Newsletter Live. When we come back, when we return on the other side, we're going to talk a little bit WBC, the Baseball Olympics, the World Baseball Classic, and the homie Jeff Erickson from RotoWire.com will be checking in. You're listening to Joe Sheehan's Newsletter Live right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. The Joe Sheehan Newsletter, the premier resource for baseball fans, fantasy baseball fans. JoeSheehan.com right now is how you get your subscription. Not just the in-season thing, also takes you through the Major League Baseball's offseason. Joe, I'll be honest with you. I was thinking to myself, listen, here we go again with this Baseball Olympics thing, and nobody has no time for this. You got all of these teams basically waiting around. Dominican Republic and Puerto Rico playing the finals. None of the big-name stars from the United States are going to go. This thing right here, sham, fraud, nothing to see here. And you know what? You got NFL free agency going on. You got the NBA coming down the stretch. You got fantasy baseball drafts and auctions going on. You got the NCAA tournament. And every night I am sitting in my house with a 24-ounce, a tall can, watching the World Baseball Classic. This has been a very, very good Baseball Olympics.
Yeah, when you... The games themselves are fine. There's nothing wrong with the tournament. Like, once you're watching the baseball, it's fine. And a lot of people I know like it because it's more intense and it's a better brand of baseball than spring training baseball, mm-hmm. which, let's face it, Corey, man, after those first hits of, oh my God, baseball's back, yeah. it's spring training ball, it's not that exciting.
No, you smell the grass and then you're like, okay, I'll wake me up on opening day.
Exactly. And so I think of people that like it for that reason. My biggest problem with it has always just been the timing. You mentioned all the things that are going on. You didn't even mention the tournament.
Yeah.
I'm a huge college basketball guy. People know that about me. And I'm not watching as much WBC. I'm watching either the conference tournaments or then the NCAA tournament, even the NIT.
NIT ball and all of that?
Oh, man, I watch CBI, Jeez. CIT, whatever's on. But here's the thing.
You watch WNBA?
No. I think that if you're trying to reach the casual fan,
yeah.
you're not going to do it in the second and third week of March.
Nope.
And that's why I've said, you know, I want to see the WBC for two reasons. One, I think you get better participation from the players, and I think you'd get a better buy-in from the fans if you had at least some fraction of it later in the year. So my idea has always been push it back to like the last week to 10 days of spring training. Do like the first round robins.
Okay.
And then you put the quarterfinals, the semis, and the finals. Take a week in July. Instead of the All-Star break being 4 days, you make it 8 days, and you have the final rounds of the WBC happen that week.
You don't think that messes with the season too much?
You're already taking 4 days off.
Yeah.
So you take 8 days off instead. And you know, by that time of year, people are banged up. You know, you could still have the All-Star voting. You still let guys get their bonuses. But I'm saying, the biggest thing is, Corey, people would be paying attention. It's the middle of July. There's nothing going on.
Yeah.
You would have the stage.
That's a dead time right there.
You would have the stage for this, as opposed to now, which is you're having it Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, starting at 9 p.m. Eastern. In the middle of March, when people really aren't paying attention to baseball yet. Mm-hmm. The final of this thing, I believe, is 9 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday.
Yep.
On MLB Network, which, God bless MLB Network, it's done a lot of good things for the game.
Nice studio.
It's a pure, gorgeous studio out in Secaucus, and tremendous people working for it. It doesn't have the penetration. And not for nothing, but you can tell the importance of a sporting event by the network it's on.
There you go right there. That makes sense. Now, under your plan, how does that push the World Series too far into November, though?
No, you're basically taking 4 extra days. Every fourth year, you're stretching the All-Star break, but instead of being 4 days, it'd be 8 days. So you're adding 4 days to the schedule. So you tack 2 to the front of the season, 2 to the end of the season. You make teams play a couple of doubleheaders. You squeeze the schedule somehow. I mean, if it's, you can find 4 days in the schedule. It's not like you're adding 2 weeks. You're adding 4 days. And the other thing is, I mean, you look at weather patterns, and I don't want to get too nerdy here, basically, you're better off in the first week of November than the last week of March in most of the places where you'd be worried about the weather.
Okay.
So generally speaking, if you're going to get really bad weather, you're better off taking the chance that it'll come in November than in March.
All right, so now let me ask you this. Rosters come out. You go look at the rosters. You look at the teams. Obviously, you say, okay, Dominican Republic is loaded. Puerto Rico is loaded. Venezuela. And you look at USA. Okay, where's Bryce Harper? Where's Mike Trout? Where's Clayton Kershaw? Good players on the U.S. team. You know, full of MLB All-Stars. But the top headline players have not been participating in this. More so, obviously, the pitchers. I think what they're doing this year, Adam Jones, Stanton, the way it's playing out this year, I think the next time you go around, I kind of look at it like USA basketball when they had that big dip with Allen Iverson and the crew. And then, you know what, Kobe and the guy said, you know what, let's go back and take basketball over and show the world this is our game. Do you think that this push that the U.S. team is making right now says to the Mike Trouts, says to the Chris Bryants, says to the top name players, the Clayton Kershaws, you know what? Let's go out here and put America's best baseball players on the field to compete on the international stage.
I think everybody said that in 2013 when we didn't make the semis. And it didn't happen. I mean, this is what I'm saying about
this
having it in March.
This is a Major League Baseball sponsored event.
But this is what happens when you have it in March. Players have that dual focus. They're trying to get ready for the season. I ran the numbers, and something like 20 of the top 25 players in baseball, whatever metric I used, only 10 of them are playing. And for pitchers, if you have any kind of minor owie or you just don't want to add that kind of stress, I mean, Tanner Roark is starting tomorrow night for...
I know.
I mean, nothing against Tanner Roark, who had a good year last year for the Nationals, but how far would you have to go down
the
list?
He's not the best pitcher on his team.
Let's go down to Herald Square.
Yeah.
And let's ask the next 1,000 people we see who Tanner Roark is.
They're not going to know.
So that's one of the reasons I want to say, hey, look, if you push this back and had half of it starting March 21st, now you can get more buy-in from these pitchers who've already built themselves up. Also, you don't have to worry about the pitch counts as much. What was it the other night? Somebody threw 4 2/3 shutout innings and they've come out of the game. Like, you kind of have this hybrid of like an exhibition type event with a global, they want it to be a World Cup type event. I think a lot of things could be solved with, and I think you get more buy-in. I think if it's the middle of the season and you tell these guys you only have to make one start, maybe two starts, I think you get more buy-in from the very best players. I think the same guys who would play in the All-Star game would play in a World Baseball Classic that had its finals and semifinals and quarters in the middle of July.
Now, when you say that, and I get that, but you said that World Cup type atmosphere is what they want to do with it. But if you look at those first round games that were in Miami, especially that U.S. Dominican Republic, the first one, the one where the DR came back with the big win. That was that World Cup type atmosphere that they were looking for. Miami was the perfect location for this. Now, obviously, the game is in Miami, and the Americans were the road team, but that happens in a city like Miami, you know, a hybrid city like Miami. But that was the atmosphere they were looking for, and then they take it out to San Diego. San Diego, they can barely get people to come watch the Padres. Mistake.
I think you got to put in warm weather cities. I mean, you're limited when you're doing this in March. And that's the other thing. If you have this thing in July, you can have it anywhere. You can have it in Chicago. Picture the World Baseball Classic final three rounds in Wrigley Field.
That'd be crazy.
In July. I mean, you could do a lot of different things with this. And, yeah, they did get a great crowds in Miami. And you're right. The crowds in San Diego were disappointing. You mentioned the parallel. I think the parallel would be U.S.-Mexico soccer games, which when they have those in the southern United States tend to be a very hybrid crowd, to be generous about it. I think there are ways to improve I think it's a good idea. I think it's kind of this hybrid between a marketing event. If you were truly having a global championship, you wouldn't have to invite 16 teams.
Yeah.
Look, right now China's not ready to compete. Israel's a good story, but the eligibility rules are a little crazy. I mean, I think you were eligible for Team Israel if you once had lunch at the Second Avenue Deli.
I watched Seinfeld.
You know,
all right, come on,
exactly. they have to do that because some of these nations just don't have a baseball culture. You're trying to build a baseball culture in a lot of these places. So again, it's this weird thing where you're trying to have a marketing event and a global championship, and this is what you get. You get the zebra, this horse built by committee.
Now, the Dominican Republic has a baseball culture. You know, the kids are out there running around, Pampers on, gloves in their hand, in the infield. Listen, the Manny Machado thing. I get both sides of it. But I grew up in Washington Heights. You know, I'm probably more Dominican than Manny Machado is, Joe.
I'm familiar.
You're familiar. You're probably more Dominican than Manny Machado is. Manny Machado is a Miami kid, born and raised in Miami, high school in Miami. His parents are United States citizens. Now, I get it. Play for the Dominican team for his grandfather. I don't even know if Manny Machado can speak Spanish. He was the catalyst behind that the first U.S. Dominican game. He was the catalyst in the DR coming back to win. And he almost, you know, if it wasn't for the great play by Adam Jones, he almost had another big strike against the Americans.
The same eligibility rules that allow Israel and Italy to even have teams have to apply to everybody. So you have guys who, if their heritage is from these other countries, they get to play for these other countries. I think the exception is Cuba, where Cuba won't let anybody who left actually play. And it's really, we've seen their performance. Yeah. We've seen their performance, you know, degrade over the last couple of years. I mean, Cuban baseball is really at a crossroads right now. We'll see where that goes over the next, you know, 30, 40 years. But you can't have rules for one country and not have it for the other. And especially, you know, Manny Machado, if you're a star at a deep position, you
that's
know,
what it is.
Well, I don't Manny Machado versus Nolan Arenado would have been an interesting conversation.
I know.
I mean, there are some positions. This actually allows players in the majors to be distributed through the tournament in a way that if it was just where you were born, well, you know, the U.S.'s third team would probably be the third best team in the tournament.
Yeah, there you go, right there. So we're down to the Final Four: United States versus United States versus Japan. Will be tomorrow night. Tonight is Puerto Rico, which has been excellent in this tournament. I don't think they have a loss. Puerto Rico versus the Netherlands. I'll be honest, I can't point Netherlands out on the map, but they're here. They're ready to rock and roll. When you look at these Final Four, the U.S., Japan, Puerto Rico, and the Netherlands, how do you handicap it?
Oh, man, it's individual baseball games that are played under weird rules. Tanner Roark is starting for the U.S.
Yeah.
I'm not going to lay any predictions out there. I think they'll be good, fun, intense games. I know that Jay Jaffe at SI.com had a preview today, you know, saying, hey, could the U.S. win this? My feeling is that it's all coin flips. Baseball was never really designed to be played single elimination.
Yeah.
So, you know, anything can happen over the next four nights. I will say that, you know, the Netherlands' performance has been interesting. Most of that team is from Curaçao. You know, you look at Jurgensen Profar, you know, Andrew Jones originally came from there. That's a small, I don't know if it's a protectorate or whatever the legal designation is, but it's a small island, and, you know, they play some really good baseball there.
Let me ask you, as far as Adam Jones is a guy who has spoken out against against Major League Baseball, has been critical of them at times, the points like that. I really felt good that was Adam Jones has kind of been the hero of this thing and make that play. I really feel like the significance of how big a play that was is kind of lost in kind of a baseball Olympic style tournament, but that was a big moment.
That's the thing. Picture that happening on July 8th.
Yeah.
When it, or preferably happening at
4th of July.
Or at 7 p.m. in the evening, as opposed to at 1:30 in the morning.
Yeah, exactly.
Which might happen. But that was one of the best plays I've ever seen, just in terms of like going over the wall type catches. He caught that thing three rows back in the, I mean, that thing was a home run. That wasn't like one of those, oh, he stole a home run, but no, it was actually going to hit the top of the wall. That ball was gone.
It was gone, yeah.
And, you know, Jones is a guy that, you know, you talk about it from an analytical standpoint. Hey, he probably shouldn't be a center fielder.
Yeah.
He certainly shouldn't be a number two hitter, but you mentioned him. He's been great for the game. He's, you know, he's a thoughtful guy. Last year, you mentioned there was a controversy of some comments he made about baseball being a white man's sport.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's something we need to get into here, but the fact that he said that, which is not something most baseball players of any race
will say
anything controversial anymore. For Jones to get up and say that, you know, you give him credit for just stepping forward, saying, you know, this is my opinion. I think he's been great for the game. And for him to have that moment, and again, you just go, I think for guys like us, for the people I follow on Twitter, for the people who read the newsletter, that's a huge moment. But it could have been a moment that transcended baseball.
Yep.
And it's not going to do it when it happens at 1:30 in the morning on a Sunday morning during March Madness. A
lot of good baseball talk going on right here, right now. Joe Sheehan, Newsletter Live, right here on the Fantasy Sports Network. On the other side, we're going to switch it up. Talk a little NCAA, a little March Madness. My guy, Jeff Erickson, RotoWire.com, and we return right here to Newsletter Live on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Great baseball minds all around. Joe Sheehan, Newsletter Live, right here at the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. I'm your host, Corey Parson, the fantasy executive. And time to head out to the hotline, bringing one of my good buddies, one of the guys that I kind of look up to in this industry. I didn't know until the other day that he was a Northwestern alum, but then again, you know, his journalism expertise, I should have, it's silly me, I should have known that. I want to welcome in my guy from rotowire.com, one of the founding fathers of Tout Wars, which I am now in the fold. I don't know if you heard about this. My man, Jeff Erickson. Jeff, what's going on, buddy?
Gentlemen, so good to talk to you. Yeah, I'm the only Northwestern guy out here in L.A. that's not part of the TV, radio, film industry, or journalist. I'm, you know, I went there, just got my poli-sci degree as the get-into-law-school degree, and then realized I didn't want to become a lawyer and got the hell out of there and got lucky and got this career to take off. So, yeah, crazy awesome week, and I was in Salt Lake to watch them. What an experience.
Oh, yeah, out there at Salt Lake. You know what? I think everybody's seen the meme of the kid crying and all of that stuff. You were there in that wild scene, big-time comeback. That's your alum. You're a big basketball fan. Kind of, this is how I look at it. I wasn't in Lambeau Field when Dez Bryant made that catch. I was in my house, but I was disturbed. I was crushed because we were robbed. We had one taken away from us. Jeff, where were you at that moment this weekend in Salt Lake City?
So it was a bad call. We all knew it was a bad call. We could see Chris Collins losing his mind on the sideline, and you know he had to, the thing is, he was right in the refs all game. Granted, I thought there was a lot of ticky-tack fouls called in that game, and then it was just kind of a culmination of events. And, it, you know, at first we thought, oh, they just missed a foul. And then you could see him motioning his hand, like, it went through the rim. At the time, he saw it, but the refs didn't. And, yeah, the thing is, though, we were down 22 points at one point. We dug ourselves too deep a hole against too good a team. There were still 5 minutes left in that game. They made their free throws. Credit to the Zags. I mean, things have to go right for you to beat them. And we gave them a scare, in which we scored 53 points in the second half against them. I'll take against an amazing defensive team. I'll take that. You know, I love the we're going to be well positioned for next year. I don't want to be too sour grapes about it, because the focus should be on, hey, we had an amazing season. We got there. Not only did we get there, we won a game and we challenged a one seed. So
yeah, I want to back up.
I'm going to walk away with that.
I want to back up a second to that. Talk about Thursday, because Saturday, obviously, you know, you were up against Gonzaga. There were no expectations to win that game. You fell down 20, and as bad as the call was, and you hate to see the bad call followed by the tee up after the ref's mistake, because it just compounds the problem. Yep. Talk about Thursday.
Yeah, but he won 4 steps
there,
on at the court.
Being there for the first Northwestern tournament game, nearly blowing it. Could you? And let me ask you, at the time, did you actually understand what had happened when the intentional foul happened, when the kid from Vandy actually fouled? I mean, could you grok what had happened in that moment?
Because I'll be honest with you, I was across the Vandy bench, and I could see it happening. You could see Bryce Drew shouting some instruction. And it was loud. It was hard to tell what was going on. It was frantic. You know, they were out of timeout for the last 8 minutes of the game. Keep in mind. So, granted, they have the four-hour commercial breaks with every TV timeout. My God, you do not realize how long the TV timeouts are until you're there in person. They are so much longer in the tournament. 3.5 minutes. It's a lifetime, it seems like sometimes. But it was just chaotic. And you can see, and right away you see the coach, the whole bench react, oh my God, what do you do? And all that. But the thing is, they are not anywhere close to being in this game if that kid doesn't hit all these heat check three-pointers to begin with. So I feel terrible for the kid. It's obviously a brain fart. He didn't realize the situation either. He thought they were down one, or he thought they were telling him to foul him. Instead of saying it's your man, I think he thought he said to foul him, and it was a brain fart there. To his credit, the kid answered questions for like 10 minutes after the game too.
So after the game, you guys went out. It was Salt Lake City, so you drank a big tall glass of milk, and you were in bed by 8:30.
So here's the thing: there are non-Mormons in Salt Lake. In fact, in Salt Lake itself, it's more like 50-50. Out in the suburbs, that's where it gets really dry, I think. But there was a Northwestern bar. They basically rented out the whole bar. It was a big place. Darnell Autry was there. Evan Eschmeyer was there. You know, all like these ex-Northwestern athletes there to help celebrate, too.
The legends
Rex
of Northwestern.
Walters transferred away. But it was crazy. You saw Michael Wilbon there. I mean, you saw, everybody. You know, there were other places to go to, but they had one that was a big pep rally place, and they had one that was a big post-party place, and it was amazing.
That's tremendous, man. I'm really glad you got to be there. I mean, I've never gone to an SC tournament game, but I've had some great moments. SC's been to the tournament, had gotten their heart broken, obviously, this weekend. But I was, when you said you were going, I thought it was really great. I'm not sure if you've had a whole lot of time to think about baseball in the next couple over the weekend, but you mind we talk a little Reds?
Absolutely. Watching them right now.
Well, we got it's over the weekend. I was writing about bad teams and kind of like plowing through. I've been doing this thing all winter where I just write about bad teams. And I didn't write about the Reds. I'd written about the Reds earlier this year. But, you know, the Reds are one of the teams this year, I think we say, where they're really not playing for this year. They're one of the seven or eight teams that you say they're rebuilding. They're building for the future. When you look at them this year, obviously Billy Hamilton creates value. Joey Votto creates value. Where's the value? Because I like when Corey and I were talking earlier about I play score sheet, I play strat. I try to find the value. I end up with a lot of Twins and A's and Reds on my team, so that's where I'm trying to find the value. Where's the value in the Reds this year?
Oh, until about 24 hours ago, I said Raisel Iglesias. But now he's got scratched from a workout yesterday with a sore elbow. That just kind of dropped now. Sore elbow, sore back. So watch this stiffness, I guess. We'll see.
It was a shoulder last year, right?
Real diagnosis. Yeah, and so just all these concerns you have with him and his durability, which is why he's moved to the bullpen. But I thought he was really good, and he was going to throw a lot of innings in relief, which I think enhances his value. Kind of a Andrew Miller light sort of situation there. But instead, we'll see what happens with that. Jose Peraza has a full-time job, and that's undisputed now, so that's good. I think his hit tool is legit, and I think his speed is obviously legit, and his green light. He's going to run a ton. And I think he's actually a better baseball player than Billy Hamilton, a better hitter than Billy Hamilton. Hamilton's a really underrated defensive center fielder, though. That's one of the values he brings to the team. But that doesn't matter for our fantasy so much, although score sheet, you know, obviously getting that rating, that range rating is really good. I think there's consensus doubt on whether Adam Duvall can repeat that because his strike zone coverage is so bad, but I, you know, it's legit power, and his defense is going to keep him in games. He actually really is highly regarded for his defense in left field, so he's going to get a lot of playing time, even through his slumps. I think there's value in that, the ability to work through things. And then, you know, people just consistently underrate how, especially in Cincinnati, how good Joey Votto is. I Tau Wars Mixed had an online draft about 3 weeks ago that I did a broadcast for, and Votto dropped to 12 overall, and keep in mind this is an OBP league. He is an order of magnitude better than anybody else with that. I mean, if you want a difference maker, he is that difference maker. And the fact that he gets, you know, good RBI and run counting stats, even with that putrid lineup, still demonstrates how often he gets on base. If you look what he did in the second half last year, it's otherworldly.
Jeff, what's going on? Corey, back at it. And I want to talk right quick about Amer Garrett. In 16 and a third innings in throughout the course of the spring, we've seen 10 strikeouts, 2.20 ERA, pitching to a 1.29 whip. Garrett, a former St. John's Red Storm college basketball player. Is he going to be the opening day starter? No, I'm just teasing. But what do you think about the phenom that has been Garrett this spring?
He's excited. He's very exciting. Now, the question is, how's that going to translate when you're facing big league hitters the second, third time around through and they see his stuff? The party line is he needs to work on his secondary pitches, and I believe that to be true, especially working on some sort of off-speed offering. Keep in mind, he wasn't a full-time baseball player. You mentioned it. You alluded to it. He played for the Red Storm, didn't give up basketball until like 3 years ago. And so he's a little behind everyone. But the plus side of that is he also has less wear and tear. I actually think, I coach my kids in soccer. I pay attention to just youth development as a whole. I think specialization in youth sports is a tremendous problem in this country. And baseball is one of the worst with that. Out here in California, all the travel ball teams we see, all these kids throwing breaking pitches at age 10, age 12, I think it's an awful, awful, terrible thing, and I think this is one of the reasons why we see so many kids get hurt, so many pitchers get hurt. So they're throwing breaking balls way before they should, and they're throwing too much, pitching too much. So there's a difference between pitching and throwing, too. I think you're far better off doing multiple activities. So it may have stunted his development a little bit, but I think it might preserve his durability.
Yeah, certainly the innings aren't on that arm. I looking at him coming through as a prospect, I always figured he'd end up in the bullpen because of the secondary offerings. Do you think he can get there as a starter? Because I look at him as a guy who could end up being a 70-inning reliever. I mean, all relievers basically have the same value now. They're going to throw 65 innings and strike out 30% of hitters, and nobody really has, you know, max of a big innings value. But do you think Garrett, you know, as soon as this year could be that guy, or are they going to continue to ride him out as a starter?
I think, you know, there's a lot more value to the organization if the more innings he can throw. I want them to take this as far as they can as a starter. We've got plenty of arms in the bullpen, and bullpen's the least important thing for a rebuilding franchise anyhow. Much rather develop him as a starter if entirely possible. And I think it is possible. I kind of view him as like ultimately being a 2 or a 3.
Wow.
I don't see an ace in that rotation. In the future, at least not now, but between he and Cody Reed, I'm reasonably excited, and I think Finnegan's got there's reasons to be happy about Brandon Finnegan too. I'm a little bit less sanguine on Robert Stevenson's chances.
Well, I was going to say, rank these three guys for me then, not for 2017, but just, you know, career value: Garrett, Reed, Stevenson.
In that order.
Wow.
Reed versus Garrett is a good argument. You know, Reed already misses bats now. And if you look at even last year's disaster as a major league debut, he still struck out a lot of batters. Give me guys that can do that, and hopefully they figure other stuff up all along the way. Even in spring training, you know, Reed's had a really good spring also, but he's working on that change, and he's really having a hard time mastering that. He gave up a home run, a change earlier, and previously that's been his issue, is working on that, because let's face it, you keep on pouring the heat, at some point major league hitters are going to be able to time it. Even with movement, you need to have something to change their speed, change their eye a little bit.
Talking with RotoWire's Jeff Erickson. Jeff, let me switch back to the NCAA for the last couple moments right here.
Sure.
How do you look at the rest of the field? We're down to the Sweet 16. How do you look at it, the rest shaking out? Obviously, that South region is still intact. Whoever comes out of that is going to be a very strong, battle-tested team.
Yeah, no doubt. And I just love that conventional wisdom has already been turned on its head, too. ACC had 9 teams in. They get 1 mm-hmm. to the Sweet 16. Big down year for the Big Ten. They get 3 into the Sweet 16. Go figure. The SEC is a football conference. Didn't look like it this weekend. They looked pretty darn strong all the way through. My bracket's a shambles, but I had Arizona beating North Carolina in the final, so I'll just stick with that.
What do you think, Joe?
I had Arizona over UCLA, and I think those are the only two teams that actually have still live left in my brackets, so hopefully that works out.
There you go right there. Jeff, big weekend coming up here in New York City. Matter of fact, right here at Rock and Rally Studio 34, the annual Tout Wars event, big time. Looking forward to seeing you this weekend, my man.
Hey, can't wait. Thanks a lot. Can't wait to see you guys both. So take care.
Thanks for coming on,
thanks
brother.
Thanks a lot, Jeff. That's Jeff Erickson, RotoWire.com. Got a few more minutes to go. Got a few more minutes remaining in the program. Going to jump hot and heavy into some fantasy baseball talk. There are bad teams in the majors. No matter if your device is an Android or an iOS device, Fantasy Sports Radio Network app, download it. Google Play, the iTunes, the App Store, whatever you want to do, get involved. Fantasy Sports Radio Network app, download it. It is your best friend, your BFF throughout the fantasy season, whether it's baseball or football. Joe Sheehan, Newsletter Live right here at Fantasy Sports Radio Network. JoeSheehan.com is how you subscribe, get involved with the newsletter. Subscriptions for the season, or you can get the 2-year package. Off-season baseball talk, smart, fun baseball, one of the best minds in the business. My guy, Joe Sheehan. Joe, time to talk a little fantasy.
If I have to.
Yeah, I know.
Nah,
how many leagues do you do?
I mean,
like regular 12-by-12 rotisserie?
We got one local league. It's a 15-team league here in the city. A bunch of good guys. Donna DeFino's in it. Corey Schwartz used to be in it. He's not in it anymore. But good local dudes. Tough league. I usually finish somewhere between 17th and 18th in a 15-team league.
Okay, in a 15-team league. That's tough.
But, you know, I show up for the draft. I have a good time.
Yeah.
It's a fun group of guys. And that's why I like to play. I don't... it's not, oh, I got to be really intense. Yeah. I want to show up, have a good time. I play a lot of score sheet. I'm in three different score sheet leagues. I used to play in a lot of Stratomatic leagues. I don't play in them as much. Yeah. But yeah, I don't play as much Roto as a lot of the guys you talk to.
And probably, are you into any of the new, like that points and head to head?
No, none of that.
No. I feel you.
And I was in Tower Wars for years.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you heard about this.
I finished second twice.
Oh, that's nice. I don't know if you heard about this.
You're in mixed.
I'm in the fold, yeah. So there you go there.
You're going to have fun this weekend, man.
Well, no. I already did the draft. I was in the draft. They was like, I need a little bit more seasoning before I sit down at the auction table with the fellas. So there that goes right there. You know what? When it comes to fantasy baseball, the draft, the auction, people look at it as like, okay, this is my team. I got to study. I got to prep. I got to do this. But really, I think that's pomp and circumstance. The foundation, especially in baseball, I think comes off the waiver wire.
I think you can lose your season at the draft.
Okay.
In a way that you can't really in football. In football, I think you can kind of fake a draft and still make it up on the waiver wire. If you have a bad draft in baseball, it's harder to make up for, especially in a good league. And this gets into, okay, if you're in a 10-team league,
yeah,
you can probably make it up. If you're in a 15-team league, an 18-team league, if you're in a single league, AL or AL only, you're not going to be able to do it. But, waiver wire work, I mean, there are guys who are just phenomenal at that stuff. Tristan Cockcroft, very aggressive. Or, the trademark, you look at a guy like Fred Zinke or Larry Schechter, where they get so much value in winning, just winning trades by 1% throughout the year. But for me, it's all about the draft, or really the auction. I haven't done a draft, I gotta tell you, in a while.
Yeah.
Auctions for me are everything, man. When you actually get access to the entire player pool, you got to make decisions on every single guy that comes through. Whereas in a draft, you're drafting eighth.
Yeah.
Okay, well, there's five guys I know I'm not going to get, and two others I might not. And then, six guys are going to go. I'm not going to make a decision on that. I like having to make a decision on every player in the pool.
There you go right there. Bad teams have good fantasy assets. Let's start with the Chicago White Sox. Listen, it's prospects galore in here. Obviously, you got a guy like Tim Anderson and Rendon also. What do you, when you look at the White Sox and what fantasy assets they have, what jumps out at you?
Well, there's an opportunity here with Charlie Tilson having the injury. He's going to be out for at least a couple weeks at the start of the season. It looks like center field is going to be Peter Borges.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really not allowed to speak publicly about Peter Borges anymore because I was wrong about him for so many years. Yeah. But I'm going to make one more shot here.
Okay, go ahead.
Plus defensive center fielder, can hit 240, 250. He's not going to walk a ton, but the real key is that he can steal some bags for you. They let him run. He's somebody who could pick up five steals in April for you. Maybe he keeps the job. The thing about it, he's one of the few plus defensive outfielders they have. So they might decide they like having him out in their center. And then maybe he keeps the job all year. He hits 240, bats ninth, but he steals 20 bases. So he's the one guy out there. Because of the injury to Tilson, it's created an opportunity for him to maybe take the center field job.
What do you think about the young players, the prospects?
I'm probably not going to see a whole lot this year. In fact, I just had a discussion. I'm co-drafting a mixed league score sheet league with a guy, and we were talking about Yoan Moncada. I'm like, I like him long term, but in a one-year league, maybe he comes up in June or July. Maybe he hits, maybe he doesn't. The strikeout rate, to me, is still going to eat his value this year, so you're not going to see a whole lot of him. Rendon, you mentioned, he's been a starter now for 2 years in the rotation. Can he cut the walk rate enough to be a number three in a mixed league? I think in an AL only, I think he's somebody that you're going to value. Yep. But in a mixed league, he seems more like a streamer to me. You look at, again, they're still turning things over. I don't know how you feel about Tim Anderson. Tim Anderson was the guy they brought up last year. Good bat to ball skills. He's not going to take a walk, but might make enough contact where he can hit 275, 310 OBP maybe, steal some bags. I'm not a big fan from a real baseball standpoint. Probably has more fantasy baseball value because he's going to bat high in the lineup, play every day, score 90 runs almost no matter what he does.
There you go. One of the things I definitely want to make sure I do this upcoming season is head out to Atlanta out there in Cobb County where the new stadium is at, see what the new ballpark is looking like. Listen, they got some decent offensive pieces. Obviously, they want to make a splash. They got a nice new stadium, but this is still a team that we expect to be on the lower end this year. Could be a miracle run, but for the most part, when you look at the Braves and for fantasy purposes, what jumps out at you?
The relievers. I look at Erodis Vizcaino in the bullpen. I look at Mauricio Cabrera. Mauricio Cabrera throws 100. They're starting with Jim Johnson as their closer, and so the saves might not be there for those two guys, but if you're in leagues that value strikeouts, those are two relievers who could get you 80, 90 strikeouts, and then fall into saves as Johnson eventually loses the job, because Jim Johnson, he's going to eventually lose the job. He's got a two-year contract, but if he gets 40 saves over the 2 years, I'd be surprised. I think Vizcaino's next in line, Cabrera behind him. It's interesting. We talk about the White Sox and their young position players. The Braves have gone the other way.
Yep.
They brought in Kemp. They brought in Phillips. They signed Markakis. All of their fantasy value in hitters is going to be with the lineup. But, you know, the offense might not be terrible because of that. I mean, they've got and Ciardi at the top of the lineup. Yep. You've got Freddie Freeman, who had a monster second half last year. There's some offensive value in that lineup. You know, Matt Kemp, again, not a great baseball player. But if he bats fourth or fifth in that lineup, he's probably going to drive in 100 runs.
Think of Swanson.
I love Dansby Swanson. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love him. I'm not sure. I think, talk about baseball versus real, I think he's a better baseball player than fantasy player, because I'm not sure he's going to steal a ton of bases, hit a ton of homers. Kind of like Addison Russell, where good player, but maybe not the fantasy value. I think Swanson's going to hit for a better average and be a good overall player. He's going to provide a lot of value in a lot of different ways, but I'm not sure it's going to show up in a five-category game.
All right, well, final couple minutes of the program. I want to talk quickly about the Milwaukee Brewers. I have right here on my notes, speed kills.
Yeah, I mean, they... 183 stolen bases last year. They had more stolen bases than all but one team had stolen base attempts. I mean, they just decided to go at it. Mm-hmm. VR turned into a player after falling out of the Astros system. Hernan Perez came up, I want to say he stole 29 bases. Keon Broxton stole 23 and a half a season. The thing is, though, it didn't affect their offense all that much. If you compare the Brewers and the Mets, they had the same weighted on base average, and they scored the same number of runs. The Brewers stole 140 more bases than the Mets did. So it doesn't show up on the scoreboard.
But why is that, though? Like, I'm trying to figure, you think speed kills generate offense that way, but...
Because you can't do it in today's game because of strikeouts. So going from first base to second base, all that really does is give the guy on the bases a better view of the strikeout that's about to happen. There's no singles anymore. Corey, there are no singles. It's hard to put the ball in play for productive outs because of the strikeout rates. Everybody's hitting fly balls now. There's a whole lot of research this winter. People talking about the increased hitters are trying to hit fly balls now. So the value of getting from first base to second base just isn't there anymore.
So with hitters trying more and more to hit the fly ball, what that's... Big contracts, home runs?
Well, no, that's where the value is. Yes. The value is slugging. We know now, I mean, the more we get into kind of like the StatCast information and the value of a fly ball versus a ground, remember, you can shift against ground balls more easily than you can shift against fly balls. You can move, you can adjust your outfielders as well, but the aggressive shifts that we see are designed to take away ground balls and line drives. The way to beat the shift is hit the ball over everybody's head.
Makes sense. Eric Timms, right quick.
I'm not a fan. I mean, he wasn't a hitter here. Went to the KBO, which is a low level of baseball and a great hitters league. I don't think this is going to work out. I think it's an interesting play. I don't think it works out. I think eventually Ryan Braun moves to first base because the Brewers, six of their top 10 prospects are outfielders.
All right, there we go. That is the inaugural edition of Joe Sheehan Newsletter Live right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network. Of course, I want to thank Joe Sheehan for hanging with me for the past hour. JoeSheehan.com is how you get involved with all the good information. Win your league. Read some good baseball stuff right here. Help support our children. How about that, Joe? Joe Sheehan Newsletter. We'll be back next week right here on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.